This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Is emor, which means safe. And the Medrash begins its discussion on the Sidra, quoting the Pasuk from Tehillim, that Imrois Hashem, Imrois Tehiris, that the statements, the sayings of the Ribbono Shel Olam are sayings of Tahara, sayings of purity. And the Medrash then goes on to a fairly lengthy discussion concerning Taharas Hadibur, the purity of speech. The purity of speech involves saying things one isn't permitted to say and saying things in a way which one isn't permitted to say. One of the very serious areas where Taharas Haloshun needs to be achieved is in the area of Nivul Peh. Nivul Peh means unclean language. And Chazal view the Isurim of Nivul Peh very severely. And what we'll do this evening is get some idea as to the Gedorim, as to the boundaries laid down by Chazal, as to what constitutes Nivul Peh, and to try and understand the meaning and the reason for it being so severe. Rabbeinu Yonah says in the third Shair of Shari Tshuva in Reish Kaftes, Omru Rabbi Seinu Zal, Achachomim have said, Kol ha-menabel is piv, anybody who speaks foul, even if through all his good deeds there has been decreed upon him a good decree of 70 years that he will have 70 years of welfare, of happiness, with one word of Nivul Peh that can be completely turned around to 70 years of misery. That's the weight that the Ribbono Shel Olam places, the emphasis he places on the cleanliness of a human being's speech. One word of Nivul Peh, and that can do away with 70 years of goodness. Uvavu zois, consequently, hamenabel is piv, one who allows his mouth to speak uncleanly, koved ovoin, v'nisar v'neelach. His aviro is heavy, is serious, and he is despised and set aside. Rabbeinu Yonah gives three things that he's done wrong. Ki ozav v'hiniach habushol v'hatzdius. Firstly, he has left aside busho and sneers. Busho is a certain shame, and sneers is sneers. Shehin hamidos hayuduos lezero hakodesh, which are the recognized midos of Jewish people. This is one of the prime requirements of a yid. Bashonim, rachmonim, goyim lechasodim. One of them is busha, the knowledge that there are certain things that one doesn't expose. That's busha. That's tznius. Certain things have to be hidden, not exposed. V'holach al shvilei azus ponim, and he has gone along the road of azus ponim, which is brazenness, the opposite of tznius, insensitivity. Whatever he wants to, just comes out. Shehi midas hanavolim haroim, and that is the midah of bad, degenerate people. Behashenis, the second thing that he has done wrong as a consequence of Nivul Peh, is ki chilel es kadosh Yisroel. He has caused the chilel Hashem. Shenema, as it says, v'omru rak am chochom v'novin hagoy hagodol hazeh. the greatest Kiddush Hashem is when the goyim turn around and they say, my goodness, what a wise and understanding nation is this great people. And when a Jew speaks with Nivul Peh, he's no different to anybody else. That's Chilul Hashem. And thirdly, Hinehu Mechalil Kli HaSeichel Asher Hu Yekar Mikol Klei Chemda. He has profaned the tool of the mind, which is the most precious tool that there can possibly be, the power of speech. It's the Kli HaSeichel, and he's taken that very special gift and that very special tool, and he's misused it. It's like one who would take a very fine instrument and use it coarsely. Take the chalif of a sheikhit and use it to saw a piece of wood with, or to cut paper with. Totally destroy it. So that the misuse of the power of speech in the form of nivul peh has, amongst other things, the consequence of actually causing a deterioration in one's power of speech. Very heavy words. The Mesillas Yesharim says, First of all, he quotes the Yerushalmi that veloi yiro b'chol ervas dovah. When we're given the general commandment, there shall not be seen among you ervas dovah, something naked. Sort of erva, that which should be covered shall not be seen. The Yerushalmi says ervas dibur. What it means is not ervas dovah, but ervas dibur. Zeh nivul peh. Nivul peh, the Yerushalmi defines as the erva of speech. That is, that in the power of speech, in speech, just as in the human body, just as in the human body there are parts of the human body which need to be covered, so in speech there are parts of human speech that needs to be covered. And when we talk of this nivul peh, we're not even talking about the kind of nivul peh that one comes across today. That probably Chazal never even dreamed of. What Chazal define as the ultimate of nivul peh is, as the Gemara says, Hakol Yodim Kalo Lama Nichneses L'chupa. People are at a chasna, everybody knows why the couple are getting married. Hakol HaMnabel Ispiv, but anybody who uses nivul peh to comment on it, that's nivul peh. So we're not talking about a dirty joke or something really grob in modern terms. We're talking about saying something which is true and real and a fact of life, but it doesn't need to be said. Here we come onto the very important area, by the way, of sex education for children. One has to understand that one comes close in that area, very close, constantly, to the problems of nivul peh. Because nivul peh is the erva of dibur. What does it mean, the erva of dibur? Just as there are parts of the human body which must be covered, that's not because they're bad, those parts, and they're wicked, and they're something to be ashamed and disgraced about, chas v'sholem. Something which has great kedusha if used correctly. Yet it still has to be covered. Why? That's tznius, that's busha. That's how it is. Likewise, when we're talking about nivul peh, even things which are real, we're not talking about things which are destructive and harmful and negative. Even positive nivul peh, just the things which a sensitive person doesn't say, keeps covered. There are ways of saying it. We'll have to discuss how. That already is nivul peh, and it's classified into the severity of aveira, which is defined by the Shari Tshuva, as we read a few minutes ago. And the Mesillas Yesharim goes on to say that this is not only because nivul peh brings one to looser morality. There's a certain breaking of barriers when one even speaks about something which is somehow kept a little separate. The part of the concept of not mentioning the Ribbono Shel Olam's name is because when you talk about something too often, it loses a lot of its majesty. So in matters of tznius too, even talking about things which need to be kept in the area of of romance, which is tznius, a little bit mysterious, talking about it too openly, apart from the nivul peh aspect, also robs it of that mystery and that romance, and makes it something more vachadik, something more permissible, something which is not behind any barrier. But quite apart from its danger or its harmful effect on morality, in addition to that, says the Mesillas Yeshurun, Elohai emesu kedivrei rabbeinu zichronam livracha, shenivul peh hu ervosoi shel hadibur mamish, that nivul peh is the erva of dibur, the nakedness of dibur itself, umishum znusu shenesa, and it is forbidden because it is in itself immoral, not because it leads to immorality, but because it is as immoral as any other form of immorality. Just like any other form of improper behavior in these matters. Chutz mi gufi shel ma'aser, they're not as serious, obviously, as the thing itself. Even though there is no punishment of kores for nivul peh, one doesn't get kores. Or misas beizdin, or one is not put to death chas v'sholom by a beizdin for nivul peh. Nevertheless, asurim heim isur atzmo. They are inherently and intrinsically forbidden, nivul peh, milvad heyesem gamkin gomim revi'in la isur haroshi atzmo. Quite apart from the fact that it brings one to immoral action, in addition to it being wrong in itself. So quite apart from its being also in what it leads to, it is also in itself. Nivul peh itself is not permitted. And just as in matters of arayas, as we learned recently in the Gemara, the Torah itself says, "Ushmarte mismishmarti," that you must make a reinforcement for my reinforcements, that it is necessary for us to go beyond the Isurim of the Torah. Thank you very much. Thanks. That it is necessary for us to go beyond the Isurim of the Torah and to institute further laws, quite over and above the laws of the Torah in matters of arayas. So in matters of nivul peh, it is necessary for us to go beyond pure nivul peh and to disallow various measures before that as well. How far? So the Medrash from the Sedra says the following: Rabbi Yudin b'shem Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Brechi b'shem Rabbi Loza, Rabbi Yaakov d'Chvachonin, v'omrin lo b'shem Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Motzinu, we find sheikem hakodesh baruch hu ches oisiyus, that the Ribbono shel Olam spoke four additional letters, v'loy hoitzi dovar megune mipiv, in order not to allow something megune to come out of his mouth. Megune is a difficult word to translate. Let us say something of disrepute to come out of his mouth. Shenemar, as it says, when Ribbono Shel Olam tells Noach to bring the animals into the ark, he says, Min ha-be'emo ha-tzahira, you've got to bring the kosher animals in, the tzahira, u-min ha-be'emo asher einena tzahira, and also the animals which are not tzahirim. Whereas he could have just said the treifa animals, the animals which are tmei. Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't. He rather uses extra words and says, ha-be'emo asher einena tzahira. In another place in the Torah, he added two or three words into the Torah, so as not to mention anything of tuma, and the animal which is not Torah, it doesn't talk about it being tameo, but an animal which is not tahira, the negative of the positive, loy tahira, rather than the negative itself. Amr Rabbi Yudin ben Menashe says, "Af kesheba liftoach lohem b'simonei behemat meyer." Even when the Rebbeinu Shel Olam gives us the halachas which govern the definitions of kosher and treifa animals, lo posach elo b'tahira, he opens up with the kosher aspect. Es hagomal, the camel is not kosher. Why not? It doesn't say ki lo matis pasu. It doesn't say the camel is not kosher because it doesn't have a cloven hoof.
He says the camel is not kosher, like kimale geiro, even though, or not even though, the camel is not kosher because it only chews the cud. Brings its positive aspect, not its negative aspect. But it hasn't got enough of the positive. Es hashofon, the rabbit is kosher. Is his treif ki lo mafris parasuhu einenu omer. It doesn't say the rabbit is treif because it doesn't have a cloven hoof. Elokimale geiro. But it says the rabbit is treif because it only chews the cud, leaving us to imply it doesn't have a cloven hoof. Vechen ha'neves, vechen ha'chazir, and so on. So what does it mean? What is so terrible about saying don't eat camels because they don't have a cloven hoof? Rabbeinu Yonah brings this Gemara lahalocha. This medrash also appears in the Gemara in Pesachim, and he brings it lahalocha, and from his explanation we'll understand what the issur is. V'omru Rabbi Seinu, and our rabbi said, says Rabbeinu Yonah, lo'olam al yotzi odom dovar mugune mipiv. A person must be careful never to allow a disreputable word to come out of his mouth. Sha'arei ikem hakosub shmoine oisius. Because the Ribbono shel Olam adds 8 letters, v'lo yotzi dovar mugune mipiv, and so on. Explains Rabbeinu Yonah. What's worrying him is there are other psukim in the Torah where the Ribbono Shel Olam does say quite openly, Tomei, says Tomei Yulochim, Ki Tomei Yulochim, over and over again, and so forth, Vayikra and other places. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, Ki Be'ez Hohi, at that time, at the time of Noach, Hoso Behemo Hatameya Muteres Ba'achila. Treifa animals were kosher. The laws of kashrus had not yet been given. Achlo Hoso Tohiru Le Korban, it just couldn't be brought on a korban, it couldn't be brought on the Mizbeach as a sacrifice. Al Kain, for that reason, Nechshav Loshon Megune, it's considered disreputable language. Im Yegane Odom Advarim Hashem Him LeMachal Odom, to say something negative about a thing which is food, which we eat. Later on, when those animals became treif, then they could be referred to as tmeidike animals, because that is exactly what they were. But prior to that stage, when they were kosher animals, to call them tmeim would have been a dover megune. V'hinein, behold, chayev ha'odom li'izor shelo yotzi mipiv dovar megune. A person must be careful not to allow a disreputable word to come out of his mouth. Gam ki yivienu ha'nachosel loshon megune laharek dvarov. Even if choosing not to use those words is going to require one to use extra words, to speak more lengthily, which is something that Chazal talk very much against in itself, part of taharas ha'loshon is also to talk briefly, to talk to the point. And but in this case, even if it is necessary to talk more at length or laharchiv ma'amorov, and to add statements, still one has to do it in order to avoid saying a dovar megune. Why? V'zeh kemoy geder lihizoher minivlus hapeh shuhu min ha'averus hachamurus. Because this is a geder, this is a preventative measure to stop one coming chas v'sholem to nivul peh. If a person will be so careful not even to say a dovar megune, certainly he won't come to nivul peh. What is a dovar megune? A dovar megune is to talk unkindly about something, to say something which could be construed as disreputable, where there is an alternative way of saying the same thing. So to talk about something which is edible and may be eaten as tomeh, that's talking disreputably about something which is kosher. Not allowed to do it. To say a camel is treif because it doesn't have a cloven hoof, that's talking negative. Why say negative about the camel? You can say it in a positive way just as well. A camel is treif because it only chews the cud. Everybody knows what you mean. So it requires a little bit more thought, and it requires a little bit more of roundabout talk. One has to talk a little bit more by implication. But that is what snus is, to learn the art of implication, to be able to imply something without actually saying it. We don't always have to call a spade a spade. There are times when one can imply what it is without calling it by its name. And here we have an idea of the length to which we have to go to avoid nivul peh. Why is that so? Mesillas Yeshorim brought to Yerushalmi that said nivul peh is the erva of dibur. It is the nakedness of dibur. Just as there are parts of the human body that need to be covered, so there are words which need to be covered and not mentioned. Ervo has two aspects to it. The one aspect of ervo is that there are parts of us that have to be covered even if there's nobody around. Makes no difference. That's one aspect of ervo. It's an innate tznius, an innate modesty, an innate sense of busho in the Jewish sense, in the Torah sense, which has to exist even if nobody's around. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam's presence is everywhere, and the human being has to know at all times that he's in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. But there's another aspect of tznius, which is the more frequent, the one that we face more frequently, which is the aspect of that there are ways to dress when one is in company, which is different to the ways that one is permitted to dress when one's not in company, both men and women. Because improper dress is an imposition on other people. That's another aspect of erva. So there's one aspect of erva which is the isur in itself, whether there are other people there or not, and there's another aspect which is a social aspect. It's an unfair imposition on other people. If nivul peh is the erva of dibur, if nivul peh is the nakedness of dibur, it must have the same gedorim. There is an aspect of nivul peh which is not permitted under any circumstances because it's wrong. But there must also be an aspect of it which is not permitted because of its imposition on other people. And let's try and understand the extent to which nivul peh is an imposition on another person. What is tahara? When we talk about taharas haloshen, the purity of speech, what is tahara? What is purity altogether? Rabbi Yeruchim says that just as it says in Tevakshena Kekesef Uchematmanim Techapseno Az Tovin Yiras Hashem, if you will search after it like silver and like precious things you will seek it, then you will understand Yiras Shemayim. Says Rabbi Yeruchim, from here we see that it is necessary in order to understand spiritual concepts to examine their counterparts in the physical world. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a physical world because it's easier to understand. And every concept which exists in spirituality has its counterpart in the physical world as well. And one can understand it much more easily when one views it physically. Does tahara have a counterpart in the physical world? Does purity have a counterpart in the physical world? Sure it does. You can have a food, for example, which has not been purified, and you won't tell the difference between the two. It hasn't been kept clean, it hasn't been kept pure, so it's been exposed to some germ or another which you can't see. It can destroy a human being. You eat it, that can be the end of you. The need to purify things to the ultimate is something which in the physical world we understand. Go into any hospital and you'll see it. Go into any food manufacturing plant and you'll see it. The extremities, the fanaticism to which one has to go to remove all impurity. Why? A little thing, what does it matter? So you've got 100 kilograms of food and you've got one germ which you can't even see, and you make a big fuss about it. Yes, because that one germ that you can't even see can kill people. That's why. And it's one germ today, and tomorrow it's going to be two little germs and it can kill two people, and if you leave it longer it will do even worse. You can start with a can of food which is beautiful and tasty, and there's one little germ in that can, one little bacteria in that can which you can't see, and you leave it for a while and you open it up and it's foul and smelly and inedible. It's become poison. That's what's happened to that one little germ. Hence the fanaticism. We're looking for one little thing. What does it matter? It's a billionth of a billionth of the mass of the whole business. Why don't we say bottle? We in halacha we say bottle b'shishim. If there's 60 times against the isur, one drop of milk in a big pot of soup, it's still kosher. But when it comes to cleanliness, no. A little bacteria which is not visible has to be out, mustn't be there. When it comes to tahara, people become fanatics. And that fanaticism has to be understood. And its counterpart in spirituality also needs to be understood. In normal halacha, in the normal areas of wisdom and of practice of Torah, we don't have to be so fanatical. A little bit more, a little bit less. that when it comes to Tahara, we see a level of fanaticism. For example, we had the story that we learned in the Gemara recently with the daughter of Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion. Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion was caught by the Romans for learning Torah, and he was sentenced to death. His wife was sentenced to death, and his daughter was sentenced to death, and his daughter was sentenced to becoming a prostitute. And the Gemara asks, what did she do wrong? And the Gemara says that when she was once walking in front of some Roman officers, and she had a very beautiful bearing. She walked very finely, very nicely, very nobly. But when she heard one of the officers commenting to the other one, look how prettily this young lady walks, she walked still a little bit nicer. That was her avera. That's the degree of punishment for an avera like that. When one's dealing on the levels of those kind of people, one little bacteria can cause tremendous degeneracy. Something which is full of bacteria, in any case, it doesn't matter if there's one more or one less. With us, it's not so important. We're infected with the bacteria, we're almost immune to it already. The only thing is, in spiritual things, it's no mila to become immune. To become immune to something which is inherently harmful and unpleasant, that's no advantage. We don't like becoming immune to coarse things. But we are immune to it. That's part of the problem. But those people weren't. The daughter of Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion wasn't. She was pure. And that one little speck of impurity was sufficient to cause deterioration of the whole can of food. That's Tahara. Tahara is the removal of any extraneous matter. And we discussed in that shiur also the Mesillas Yesharim's definition of Tahara. That even a person who does a mitzvah, but in the mitzvah there is mixed just a tiny little speck of self-interest. Says the Mesillas Yesharim, certainly it's a mitzvah. He's not going to say that it's no mitzvah. But purity it isn't. Tahara it isn't. It has that little bacteria in it. It's not completely refined and completely purified until it's nothing but the pure thing. Where there's a lack of taras haloshim, that means in one's speech there is an impurity, there is a bacteria. A person uses nivul peh. It's not just that one word of nivul peh that one can ignore and the rest of the speech is unaffected. If one finds bacteria in the can of food, you've got to throw out the whole can of food. It's not good enough to take that out, because now you don't know how the food has been affected. When you hear nivul peh in a statement, you can't just take out the word of nivul peh and leave the statement unaffected. The Kuzari says in Simon Ayin Beis of the second Maimer, ki hamechuvan min haloshen. What is the intention of speech? What do we intend to do when we speak? What is that power called Loshen? He kones mashiyesh benefesh hamadaber, benefesh hashomer. It is that what exists in the soul of the speaker should be injected into the soul of the listener. We're talking about transfusion of ideas, not just communication. When A speaks to B, it's not a superficial level of communication and B can choose whether to accept or not. If A is a skillful communicator, he is injecting right into the system of B something which comes out of his own nefesh. Unlike the written word. The Kuzri goes on. V'zois hakavona lo tigomer, and this intention can only be ultimately achieved al tumo, with perfection. Eloponim elponim. Only when people are communicating face to face. Can't be done over the telephone, and it can't be done by letter or by telex. Mipnei shelezvorim haneemorim, for the oral word, ma'ale al advorim shibichtav, has an advantage over the written word. Chamo she'omru, as they say, mipi sofrim v'lo mipi sforim. We must learn from teachers, not from books. Mipnei she'ezorim bidvorim shibal peh, because in the oral word there are extraneous communications. Be'amida b'mokim ha'afsoka. For example, skillfully timed pauses, where you want to stop, where you want to pause just long enough to give the person the opportunity to integrate, to get ready for the next statement, for dramatic effect sometimes. And to speak continuously where you want a continuous train of ideas. With the strength of one, of the volume of one's speech, and with the reduction of volume. And with hints and suggestive movements, movements of amazement, movements of question, all these different emotions which can be communicated not only through the word but through the tone of voice, through the way one speaks. And all this additional extraneous communicative ability enables one to be much more brief in one's verbal communication, because one is communicating not only on the verbal level. And the speaker can also make use of tenuis enov vegaboisov, the movement of his eyes and his eyebrows, with the whole roisho and his whole head, with the yodov in his hand, lahovin hakas v'harotzim v'hatchino v'hagayvo al hashir shuritze, to communicate anger or willingness or pleading or arrogance to whatever degree he wants. A communicator is an actor, and an actor, a dramatist. A dramatist communicates not only with words. A dramatist communicates with his entire being, and he skillfully adjusts his volume, he skillfully handles his body movements, so that what is being communicated is something which is only partially on the conscious, intellectual, verbal level. While one's busy talking, there's a whole world of communication which is taking level on a which is taking place on a completely subconscious level. And you think that you've understood it on an intellectual level, and now you'll decide whether you're going to accept it or not, and meanwhile it's deeply implanted inside your soul. You don't even know it already, but you've accepted it. That's the art of advertisement. You read the words and you think to yourself whether you're going to agree with it or not. But if the advertisement is skillfully worded and designed, you've been sold on it before you even know what happened to you. That's what it is. That's its power, and that is the power of speech. But this introduces us to the very grave danger of speech, or rather to the very grave danger of listening, because one doesn't really have free will once one's listening. Your only point of free will is to who to listen to. But once you're listening, if he's a skillful communicator, you're in his hands. You're not even going to have the opportunity to really be discerning. One can be discerning on an intellectual level and decide, I'll never listen to him again. That's as far as one can be discerning. But to constantly expose oneself to a particular person speaking who happens to be skillful and, let us say, negative in his communication, you can't come away unaffected. You can't come away neutral and critical. You've been affected already, much more so than with reading. And while we know about controlling what we read, and we know about controlling what our children read and what they see, how often have we thought about controlling and censoring what they and we hear from one another, even? How often does one hear a parent saying to a child, sorry, you're not going to play with little so-and-so? Why? Don't they keep kosher? No, they keep perfectly kosher. What goes into the mouths in their house, I'm not worried about. I'm worried about what comes out. I'm worried about what you hear there, not what you eat there. How often have we ever heard a parent say such a thing? But that's far more important. If you eat treif, then you see the tshuva, you say sorry, and it's finished. If you've heard nivul peh, one's mind is affected. If one's heard loshon hara, if one's heard rechilus, if one's heard a word of leitzonus, a word of cynicism, one word of cynicism, what it can destroy. A lifetime of building can be destroyed by one joke. And then what do you do? Is it worth exposing oneself or one's children to that danger without considering it? And then so we must all become paranoid and start subjecting one another, one's children's friends, parents, to deep psychoanalysis before one allows one's children to play with them. But an awareness, yes, to keep one's eyes open and to understand the dangers, and to understand that what we hear is far more influential and therefore potentially destructive, and on the other hand creative, than what we eat and what we see and anything else. the exposing of oneself and of one's child to people from whom they will hear fine things, good things, clever things, wise things, deep things. You know what that is? We let our children look at television. We don't care. It's not yet quite as much of a problem in this country as it will become, and as it is in America, when one sees the number of hours a week that the average child, even the average Jewish child, is exposed to it. And one thinks, so what? Watch television half an hour a day, a couple of hours a week, so what? So what? From the nefesh of that actor on the screen into the nefesh of your innocent little child without him knowing the difference. A transfusion. People are worried about getting blood transfusions today. AIDS. What chance is there? Worried? It's Tyro, there must be purity. How do I know the blood is pure? The transfusion of ideas from AIDS infected people, that we don't mind so much. That my brain should be infected with AIDS, that my neshama should be infected with AIDS, that's fine as long as my body isn't. That's how we are. We demand Tahara when it comes to our health. We're not particularly concerned about Tahara when it comes to our minds and when it comes to our souls. And that is the aspect of Ervas Hadibur. Just as Ervo is wrong in its essential way, as it is also wrong in its communicative way, in that it is an imposition on others, so Ervas Hadibur, apart from being wrong because it's a lack of tzlius, and wrong because it's a chilul Hashem, and wrong because it's chilul of the most beautiful tool of the intellect, apart from those reasons given by Rabbeinu Yonah, it's also Ervas Hadibur. It's an unfair imposition on other people. A man comes out with something which is foul, and bacteria has been transmitted, transfused from his soul into somebody else's soul, without giving that person the fair chance of deciding whether he wants to be infected or not. When it comes to infection, you don't go into an infected place and say, well, I'll keep the bacteria out. This bacteria mustn't come anywhere near me, and that bacteria mustn't come anywhere near me. That's not one's choice. One's choice is, it's infected, I'm not going there. And that has to be with Tyre or two. It's infected, I'm not going there. Because I can't protect myself if I'm there. If I'm there, I'm unprotected. And this little infection. There's so many examples in Chazal that we can give, but there's the one very tragic example of Acher. Acher was the was Rabbi Elisha ben Abur, who was one of the teachers of Rabbi Meir. And he went off, he started off very great, and he became an apikoros eventually. And the Gemara is very fascinated with Acher. What went wrong? And they asked him once. Acher was giving pshat, they were discussing a posuk. Toiv acharis dovar mereishisoi. Pasuk in Kohelet says the end of a matter is better than its beginning, which in simple terms means once you get to the end of it, you know it's all okay. At the beginning you don't know how it will turn out, but once it's complete, you know it's good. That's all part of the shita of Kohelet, that a funeral is a better place to go to than a party for the birth of a child. Was the child only born, who knows what's going to happen to this child still. But at the death of a person, you can see it was a tzaddik. It's a wonderful celebration in the sense if a person concludes his life, but tzidkus. That's the simple meaning of it. Rabbi Elisha ben Abuya says another explanation. Ela toiv acharis dova merishusoi, bizman shehu toiv merishusoi. Provided it was good to start with, then it can end good. Toiv acharis dova, the end of a matter is good, only merishusoi, if it's been good all along. But if there was a little bacteria in it when it started, by the time it's finished, it's going to be completely rotten. And Acher says, I'm the living proof of that pasuk. Tragic thing. Avuya Abba, Avuya my father, Migdoile Yerushalayim Hoyo, was one of the great people of Yerushalayim. Can you imagine who he was? Even today, if we would say, so and so is one of the great people of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is filled with unbelievably great and outstanding people. Of the great people of Yerushalayim in that time. In the time of the Tanoim, in the time of Rabbi Meir, in the time of Rabbi Akiva, Elisha says about his father, he was Megadele Yerushalayim. Beyoim Shebo Lemay Haleni, on the day of my bris, Kora Lechol Gedele Yerushalayim. He called all the Gedolim of Yerushalayim, he invited them all. Vohishivan Bevayis Echad. And he set them down in one room in the house. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Bevayis Echad. And Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua were also sitting in one room, separate min the achlum v'shosun shorin mitapchim u'merakdin, from all the other people who were singing and dancing and having a happy time. Omer Rabbi Eliezer to Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer said to Rabbi Yeshua, "Ad inun askin bedidhun." While they're busy doing their thing, that's the way they enjoy their simcha and they're welcome to it. Nasek onun bedidon. Let us do our thing. The Yoshua v'nis askin bedivrei Torah. They started talking together in learning. Min haTorah, the Neviim, they started with Chumash and they went through to Tanakh. Min haNeviim, the Ksuvim, the Yordo Eish min haShemayim veHikifo Yisom. Their level of spirituality was so intense that a flame came down from heaven and surrounded them. They had a strimal of fire around them. Omar lehen Avuya. Avuya looked at this and his eyes nearly fell out of his head. Rabbeisay, my batim, this roof is basic. Allah, have you come to destroy my house? Have you come here to burn my house? What are you doing here? Amrullah Chas Vesholim, I said, not at all. We were sitting and revising our learning, going over the Shir. Min haTorah leNeviim, min haNeviim leKsuvim. We were talking in Chumash, in Tanakh. But we were enjoying it so much, everything was so alive and alert as they were on the day it was given at Sinai. And just as fire came down at Sinai, same it came now, we relived Mount Sinai. There was the joy and the novelty, the newness and the freshness and the excitement of Torah to such a degree that the symptoms were the same as on Har Sinai. And as you know, the main giving of Torah on Sinai was with fire.
My father Abuya said to them, Rabosa, im kachi koicho shel Torah, my goodness, he said, if that is the power of Torah, that you can create fire by learning, no matches, no chemicals, nothing, just by learning you can create fire. Im niskayim li ben hazeh, if this boy that we are blessing today lives, la Torah ani mafrisha, I'm setting him aside for Torah. Wonderful thing, says Elisha. Lefishaloi hoiso kavanoso l'shem shemayim. Since his intention wasn't l'shem shemayim, lefichach lo niskayim aboisa haish. Therefore, it didn't come to fruition. We wouldn't consider that shaloi l'shma. We would think, what a wonderful thing, because we're so immune to it, we're so infected as it is, that it just doesn't make any difference. But to a person of the purity of Avua, the father of Elisha ben Avua, to introduce that aspect of Shelo Lishma, he's doing it, why? Because he was impressed with the fire. And if there wasn't fire, you wouldn't have done it. You've been impressed by dramatics. You've been moved by external things. That's what's moved you. It's not the inherent, essential Kedusha of Torah which moved you, because that you knew before. What's the Chiddush? What did you learn new today that you didn't know before? Only the fire you saw, the dramatics of it, and that made you say, my son will be dedicated to Torah. A person who acts because of the dramatics, that's Shilui Lishmot, the little bacteria. Nothing very harmful on its own, it's very small, it's very tiny. But as the years went on, this little bacteria ate away at the purity of the sun, at the purity of Acher. Until finally, he loses his Yiddishkeit altogether, he loses his Yerushalayim altogether, and he becomes an Abikurus. And so that is what he traces it to. If the words of a father as great as Avua could have that damaging effect on a son as great as Elisha at that time, at the time of his bris, when he couldn't even hear it, or when he could hear it but not consciously absorb it, to get some idea of the power of oral communication, of the extent to which an individual can be influenced by Dibur, by Loshen. What is the preservative
How does one ensure that it doesn't happen? This is very frightening, because that means you can have a person who is exceptionally great in every area. He knows the whole of Shas, fine, sensitive, humble, everything he can have. And yet there can be deep down in him a little germ which he's not even aware of, and through the years it can eat away at his excellence to the point where he's left with nothing. It happens with Achaz. One can save and save and save and build up a huge storehouse of food, but if one didn't disinfect the storeroom first, you can land up with nothing and all be gone. Right? One little germ which you couldn't even see with the eye. What is the mechanism that we have to use to ensure the purity, the tahara, which we require? Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says in Gemara Shabbos Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph, "Mai dichtiv." What does it mean when it says, "V'hoyo emuna sitecha choisun yeshuas chokhmas v'das"? And it shall be that your trust in God will be choisun yeshuas chokhmas v'das. Emuna. What is emuna? Zeh seder zroi. That's the whole of the first section of Shas. That deals with Truma and Meister and so on. Itecho zeh seder moed. The second phrase that is used, itecho, that's the second seder of Shas, moed. Chosin zeh seder noshim, Yeshua zeh seder nezikin, Chochmas zeh seder kodshim, Vedas zeh seder tohiris. So the Pasuk says, if you have the whole of Shas in your hand, every one of the six sedarim of Shas you know, V'afilu hachi, nevertheless, the next words in the Pasuk are, Yirat Hashem hi oitzora. Yirat Shemayim is the storeroom. If you haven't got Yirat Shemayim, you have nowhere to store it all. Omar Rove, Rove said, B'shor shemachnisim odom ledin, when a man comes upstairs to be judged, Oimrim lo yid, Ribbono shel Olam says, Nosato v'nosato be'emuno. First thing he wants to know is, were your business dealing straight? First question is not, did you keep Shabbos? First question is not, did you keep Shekashrus? Not even, did you talk Lashon Hara? First question is, were your business dealing straight? Number two, Kovato Isin L'Torah. Did you fix times for learning? It doesn't say, how much do you know? How much did you learn? I want to know, was there a fixed time? 5 minutes a day, half an hour a day, an hour a day? Something that you fixed that come what may, at that time you were learning. That's the second question he asked. The third question, Osakta Bepiria Viribia. Did you involve yourself in reproduction, in populating the world? Fourth question, Zipisol Yeshua. Did you look forward to the Mashiach coming, or did you just forget about the Mashiach? Fifth question, Pilpalta Bechochma. Did you extend your knowledge and wisdom with Pilpul? Did you go into Shas with excitement and with learning one thing from another? Next question, Hevanta Dova Mitoich Dova. Did you deduce, did you apply the principles that you learned? Did you apply one thing to another? Did you deduce one concept from another? V'afilu hachi, and even then, after all these questions. So now we're dealing with a man who knows the whole of Shas, whose business dealings were straight, who fixed time for learning, who involved himself in Piriyah Viribya, who waited for Mashiach, who was Mephalpel and Chochmah, and he learned one thing out from another, a big Talmud Chochmah, a big Tzaddik, Tafil Achi, even then. In Yirat Hashem Mitzoro, in Yiloylo. If you also had Yirat Shemayim, then it's all okay, you've passed. If not, it's all useless. Frightening thing. A lifetime of achievement, someone can come upstairs and go, nothing. Not doesn't exist. Moshe Lodom Shom Al Yishlucho, for example, a man says to his messenger, Hali li kur chitin la'aliyah. Please, he says, bring me a kur, a ton of wheat, and store it in the storeroom. So the Shliach did it. Omar, later on, he says to the Shliach, by the way, irabto li behen kav chuntun. Did you mix into that kur of wheat, did you mix a kav of salty sand? Omar Lelavi says, no, you asked me for wheat, not for salty sand. It would have been better had you not put it there. It's true you put the kur of chit in there, but I wanted a ton of wheat that I would be able to use, and it's now useless, it's going to be completely rotten. You didn't put the preservative there. And so it is, no matter what the quantity and the degree of one's knowledge and righteousness is, if it isn't permeated with a Yirat Shemayim, the preservative isn't there. It hasn't been disinfected. And if it hasn't been disinfected, it lays itself open to complete rotten decay. We started talking last week about the Yiras Shamayim as being the absolute bottom level of the first stages of achievement in Yiddishkeit. Yiras Shamayim, which on the one hand is the most primitive of emotions and the most primitive of characteristics, Yira, fear, something from which even an animal, to which even an animal is sensitive. At the same time, that same Yira spans the whole area of human achievement up till the greatest of the great, Moshe Rabbeinu, with the Yiras Shamayim. If you use the term Yiras Shamayim for a simple person or for a great person, it's a compliment to both of them. That's the only midah which applies from the bottom all the way through to the top. That is the ladder of spiritual achievement. That's the only thing we can climb up. Everything else we achieve as we climb that ladder. Yiras Shamayim, which on the lowest of low levels means, as we said last week, simply fearing consequences. Knowing that what one does is a consequence. If one does an Aveiro, then one has to pay for it sometime. Whether one pays by doing tshuva or one pays through a punishment, but one has to pay. And on the other hand, if one does something worthwhile, one knows that there's going to be consequence to that too. Every little mitzvah that one does, every kind thought that one has, every good word that one says, one knows there's a Ribbono Shel Olam who watches and who smiles and who acknowledges every little action. And to be conscious of that all the time, that there is a God with me, there is a God who watches, who cares, who records, who remembers and who responds. That's Yiras Shamayim. That we have now as the concept, not only as the first level, but as the preservative. Even if one's achieved a great deal other than Yiras Shamayim, if one has the Yiras Shamayim, it may be preserved. If not, it becomes infected. And so dibur, which is not tohu, speech which is not pure, speech which has not been disinfected, is speech which lacks Yiras Shamayim. When a man speaks as if God is not present, that's nivul peh. And that's why it's compared to arayis, to the elvo shebedibur. When a man dresses as if the Ribbono Shel Olam is not present, that's also no good. Man speaks as if the Ribbono Shel Olam is not present, that's impure speech, speech which has not gone through the process of purification. Rav Yeruchim brings the beautiful posuk which Shlomi sang a little bit earlier. Yiras Hashem Tehira. The posuk says Yiras Hashem is purity. That's what Yiras Hashem is. Yiras Hashem is the disinfectant. That Tosfos describes the various aspects of Torah. Torah Hashem Tzmima, Torah itself is perfect, and the Mishpot. And each part of Torah is described in the Pasuk. But Yiras Hashem, what is the description of Yiras Hashem? Yiras Hashem Tahira, that is the disinfectant, that's the purity. That's what takes everything else you've achieved and makes it something which can be preserved. Oymedes Lo'ad, and it's lost forever. With Yiras Shamayim, you've got long lasting achievement. Without Yiras Shamayim, you've got momentary achievement. And this opens a world of understanding of oneself and of where one can go. We often ask why it is that a person can reach such peaks of spiritual awareness sometimes, and a few minutes later it's all gone. Whether it's the last moments of a Ne'ilah on Yom Kippur, or with sitting and listening to a beautiful piece of Chazonis, or it's at a Simcha, that one is singing and dancing and one feels elevated, and you think, my goodness, my life will never be the same. When one stands at the Kosel HaMa'arovi late at night, all by oneself, one says a few chapters of Tehillim quietly, as one walks away in the darkness, one thinks, my goodness, my life will never be the same. And it is the same. Next day it's as if you were never there. What's happened? We've reached these heights and we don't have the preservative. We've reached these amazing heights and we've put them away in the can, and we've sealed the can, and we think now we've got it forever. And we open the can and it's worms. Nothing there. What's happened? Bacteria. We didn't disinfect the can first, that's all. Yiras Shamayim. As we walked away from the Kosel, we left the Ribbono Shel Olam there as well. Everyone walks away from the Kosel and you walk up through the Arab markets. Slowly, slowly God starts disappearing. And one walks up Rehov Yafo, and if it's on a Saturday night, by the time one gets to the crossroads of Rehov Yafo and Rehov Melech George, God's right out of the picture. No Ribbono Shel Olam anymore. And what do you get home finally, and you quickly open the can, and it's all gone. Nothing left. What happened? It was there, sure it was there. But it didn't have the preservative. Things are preserved as long as there's Yiras Shamayim. as long as when on that walk back one has the Ribbono Shel Olam with one, and one's thoughts are godly, and what one sees is godly, and what one hears is godly, it's possible to retain that. And we're prepared to expose ourselves to infected speech after all this work to try and reach a height, work on ourselves, effort to build ourselves, to learn more, to do more, to achieve more, to understand more, to become more sensitive. We work and work and work, and we're prepared to go into infected areas, and then we wonder the next day why nothing is left of our work. All that effort for nothing? Yes, is the Gemara. You can have a lifetime of effort and come 120 years later and there's nothing because there's no Yerushalayim. As long as there is Yerushalayim, there is the preservative that can be achieved. And as we said last week, while on the one hand this sounds worrying and awesome that all this work can be lost without the preservative, on the other hand it's a wonderful thing to know. That means whatever one has achieved in every little thing can be added to one's storehouse, can be added, and one can build up an enormous treasure over the years. All one needs is to stick in the Yerushalayim all the time as well. It's really very simple, it's really very easy. We're still going to discuss how one achieves Yerushalayim, but whatever it is, it's not really difficult because it's something so primitive, it's something so basic. Just to be conscious of a looking God, of a God who's there, who cares and who responds. That's all you need to be conscious of. And once you've got that, you've got everything. Because as we said last year, once there's Yerushalayim, every further step comes automatically, and once there's Yerushalayim, everything which has been achieved is preserved. Can you imagine if one was guaranteed that there was no, would be no inflation, that every cent you put away into a money box would remain worth that cent? Can you imagine how easy it would be to save? You put away 5 cents a day, you put away a rand a day, at the end of the month you've got 30 rand, at the end of the year you've got 350 rand, at the end of 10 years you've got 3,500 rand, but it's 3,500 rand of 10 years ago. Imagine if the last 10 years ago we'd have been putting a rand away every day. 3,500 rand 10 years ago was a lot of money. What we would only do for such a guarantee. In Yerushalayim, in Torah we have the guarantee. If there's Yerushalayim, everything we put away will be preserved, will be there, and it will accumulate interest as well. Without the Yerushalayim, we can put away as much as we want, and the inflation eats away at it, and eats away at it, and eats away. When you open the can, there's nothing in it. It is of no use. And like everything with Torah, it's these little things which are so critical. Seeing the fire around the heads of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, that's not important. They didn't even notice it. And the fact that it moved Abua to make a dramatic decision, that decision wasn't worth very much. It's the little acts of Yerushalayim, the little feelings of awareness of a God who's with us, that makes the difference between a human being who's growing and developing into godless and one who's remaining stagnant.